You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Folks, we're going to have one heck of a good program tonight. If I were you, I'd get real comfortable. Make sure you got pen and pencil by your side, because I think we're going to take a stroll down to the saloon. See, the band's playing. Everybody seems to be having a lot of fun. Sometimes, though, you never know what's going to happen. They just came in the door. My God, look what's happening. Clean them out. Can you see who it is? Wow. It's Linda Thompson, and she brought a mariachi band. And there's Bob Ross with her. How you doing, Linda?
Hi, Bill.
Boy, you sure laid those guys out.
It's a lot of fun, thanks.
And Bob, welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Thanks, Bill. Pleasure to be here.
You know, we've got an awful lot of people here, and Bob, you did 6 hours the other day, and certainly opened everybody's eyes. I think nobody came here knowing who they were, did they?
That's usually the case. You know, a lot of really good patriots and people I've met, young people and older people alike in the militias, are willing to fight and in some cases maybe even die for their country. But very often, they don't know what they're fighting for really. Do we really know what sovereignty is, what freedom is? And if we don't, are we any better than the people that we're fighting? So that's what I try to do, is to educate the people on that.
And when I saw you, did a good job. 6 hours really isn't enough time to really teach someone everything they need to know, but you certainly open their eyes and convince everybody that they have a lot of studying to do.
Exactly, yeah.
And Linda, you talked today for 2 hours, and I know a lot of people were surprised. I kept hearing this, is she an agent provocateur? Is she, what's she going to say? And
I can talk for 2 hours standing on my head, you know that?
Yeah.
But being an agent provocateur, well, I don't know. I think you can just know a tree by its fruit.
I think so, too.
If you're an agent provocateur, you ought to be able to figure that out right away. So I don't think you can say that about somebody that's actually exposing what they're doing and making it hurt. Because I think we've done a lot to expose what's going on. Of course, you've done a lot. But that's how you can tell the real ones from the fake ones. What I've noticed with what I call the agents, not just provocateurs, but the government lickspittles, is that they steal everybody else's stuff, and they'll put it in a compilation and sell it to the public and get some credibility that way, and they don't do any of their own work, ever.
That's correct. What mariachi band? What are they doing? Don't they know that's not Mexican music? We'll get this straightened out here somehow, folks. What's hot, Linda? What's going on?
That mariachi band's a Tennessee militia, Bill.
The Tennessee militia, they brought their guitars. That guy with a trumpet, boy, I'll tell you, he's wild.
He's one good one, boy. He's a bugle boy.
What's hot? What's happening?
Oh, man, what's not happening? ATF has shot up two more people. I just read an article on my program tonight about it. The ATF broke in on a woman at 4:30 in the morning and had the wrong house, and I've forgotten where the city was. I didn't bring my notes. But they've done it again. They've shot somebody else, and they're not being called to task for it. And then over in Virginia, they busted a militia leader because they said he was preparing to wage warfare on the federal government. Now, so far as I know, that's not illegal. So that's two this week that I know of.
Considering that it's not our constitutional government, and considering that they are preparing to enslave the American people, I'd say that they probably got the wrong man.
Yeah. Well,
actually, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't the Constitution guarantee us the right to wage war against the federal government when they exceed their authority?
And that's what the Second Amendment's all about. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. It's a guarantee that you can do that.
That's right. We're also guaranteed a Republican form of government.
Well, that went out the window when...
long time ago.
Our Republican form of government is gone. Well, we saw the MasterCard MasterChip come into play this week, the new microcircuit card that MasterCard is using. And that's interesting because it accompanied the announcement of the INS getting $72 million in their budget to do a database for supposedly to detect illegal aliens, but they're going to make it available to all employers to check their employees with, which means they're going to be checking for Social Security numbers, and if you don't have one, you can't work.
From what I understand, they're going to institute the card, so to speak, amongst certain age groups to begin with, and what they're going to justify this with is to stop the illegal immigration into this country.
Yeah, that's what they're calling it. They're saying it's for our own good because we have so many illegal aliens and they're taking Americans' jobs. So they're going to use this as a way to screen all of us, not just illegal aliens, but all of us. And if you don't have a Social Security number, you won't work. Now then on the younger end of the scale, we've got them making mandatory, the inoculations mandatory. And we had a caller into the program this afternoon that said a nurse in our city, Indianapolis, had said they were now putting chips in children, babies, when they were born, if the parents wanted them. Now, it's already gone that far.
Well, I can see how they would justify something like that to people who didn't know better.
Well, they were using these originally. They planted these chips in dogs. Now, all the humane societies are putting these chips in dogs, and they're telling people it makes it easy to identify the dog and to find a lost dog. But I found an article in Maine where the police were saying this is the best police enforcement tool they'd ever had for going after the owners of stray dogs and charging them with offenses of leaving their dogs loose.
Oh, my God. No pooper spooper.
Another way to get a tax. Another tax collection mechanism. That's what it's become.
That's correct.
Well, I love animals and I love dogs, but I'm not quite ready to give up my rights so that we can find Fluffy.
Exactly. Or find Billy. Because what good is an ID chip in a child? I mean, let's don't even talk the constitutional aspects of it. Why would you want a chip put in your child that could could come loose, float to the child's heart, kill him instantly, is only good if they find the child dead somewhere for identification purposes, and has all sorts of health potential complications, Why would you want that?
That's right. Health complications is right. You actually could get attached to this health plan through that kind of a thing.
That's another thing.
At least you don't have to pay for it. Yeah.
Oh, when Clinton was talking in Arkansas the other day, he had the 16-year-old girl get up and talk about how terrible health care was. Did you catch that?
No.
They didn't put this in the national papers. They talked about how all the protesters booed this girl when she got up and how terrible it was, that the protesters were so out of touch with reality because the girl was describing all this terrible health care and all of her problems and how she hadn't been able to get treatment and how dismal the medical treatment was. What they didn't tell you was she was talking about her health care under Medicaid, government-sponsored health care.
Yeah, and he's using people. Last night I watched, I don't know what time it was because I haven't slept in a long time. I'm not going by the clock anymore. He had two people in the audience stand up. He made these two people stand up. They were sitting together, which means they came together, which means they were probably planted there. One had only one arm. The other one had just lost his wife to cancer. And he's using these people to tell their stories. Now, they're standing there, and I'm sure that they're hurting in some way. And I'm sure that they wish that they didn't have to pay for doctor's bills and things like that. But I think that that is inexcusable to use people like that. He should be able to stand on the merits of his program, and the program should be able to stand on its own merits, and not on the sob stories and the emotional appeals that are being made to the American people. This is a soap opera that's disgusting.
Exactly. And all you've got to do to look at what government-run health care is like is to look at the VA hospitals. Any veteran that's been treated in a VA hospital can tell you what government-run health care is like. Any dependent, any active-duty military, anyone on Medicare, anybody on Medicare.
That is if the veteran can still talk, because they use these VA hospitals to experiment on veterans.
Yeah.
And
tell me about it.
And do all kinds of things without their permission, and who knows what all.
And they get the dregs of the medical profession in those facilities as well. People that can't get jobs anywhere else because they don't have to have the same qualifications as they do on a state-run level. And so they get some of the people that have actually been kicked out of other hospitals go to work in the VA. And then look at Canada and look at England, and their social programs, their medical programs have bankrupted them.
We don't even have to look at other countries, because if you look at just the entitlement programs in the history of this country have been notoriously inefficient consistently. And the sheeple of America have a short-term memory, so they forget. An example of that is the welfare programs in this country. We spend, for each welfare recipient, $150,000 out of a $180 billion welfare budget. In other words, for each person receiving food stamps and Medicaid or Medicare and all of that, it costs us $150,000, the American taxpayers, alleged taxpayers. And I think if the welfare people in this country knew that, they'd say, hey, keep your food stamps. Keep your Medicare. Give me the $150,000.
Sure. They'd build their own highways and everything else, too. By the way, folks, I want to tell you, Lynn Thompson is certainly not an agent provocateur. And for those of you who have never seen her and you're wondering, she looks a lot better than the broad that they put on... what is it? The blue scandal sheet from Plungers or whatever.
Here's a message for all the militias out there. We're soon going to have all the reloading presses we could ever need, because we're suing Dillon Press for $50 million.
Hey, that's all nice. Right. Can we get a couple?
Sure, you betcha. How many you need, guy? For you, anything.
No, but we'll get a few, and we'll use them too.
Absolutely.
Did you bring him too?
He's from Kentucky.
I can't believe it. You brought the whole crowd, Linda. And he's bad. Is this the guy that you're going to send into court to sue? These gun-sucking pigs?
No, no, he's the one that's going to keep them wondering where he is.
Really?
He's the one that says, go ahead, make my case.
That's right. Let's see, wait, do we have the number? Oh, we don't have the number to give out for that cop that knocked me unconscious. I need to do that, Bill.
Oh, why don't you tell that story? You know, we have a different audience than you do. They don't know what's going on. Tell them the story.
Okay,
what happened to you?
Clinton Healthcare Bus. The
Clintonista Healthcare Bus.
That's right. Well, the Phony Express was this bunch of buses, four buses that the UAW, the United Auto Workers, and AT&T spent a couple hundred thousand dollars plus to fund four buses to go across the country, and they started sometime last week and were supposed to arrive at the beginning of this week in Washington, D.C. And they were intending to pick up supporters for the Clinton health care plan along the way and drop them all in Congress with petitions for Congress to pass the health care reform. Well, this is phony, and of course, most of us don't have that kind of money. We can't come up with four buses to fund. Or we could, you know, we could probably easily fill 100 buses if we could afford the buses to oppose this health care plan.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to resort to what we can, and so we decided we would get it out on the radio that these buses were coming to town, and tell everybody when they come to your town.
The buses were coming to town?
Yeah, find out where they are.
I don't have any music for that.
Oh, sorry.
The buses are coming. Oh, here's.
How about here comes
the ride from Duel and the Sun?
Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy.
Go ahead. What happened?
Okay, so every city that they went to, we had a really good turnout of protesters. And it got to the point that the bus drivers and the people on the buses were getting paranoid. They were leaving the buses. They were not staying on the buses. They wouldn't ride the buses. And the guys that coordinated all this had to change the places that the buses were going to go because we had gotten so many protesters to show up at each of their locations. And, in fact, especially when they came to Indianapolis, they had to change the location from a nursing home because the nursing home kicked them out. And the bus had passed through Omaha before it came to Indianapolis, and it only had 20 people on it. So it was hardly worth protesting at all, but, you know, the gesture, we had to do it. So about 600 people turned out in Indianapolis to protest this bus. And all they could get for their side was UAW people, auto workers, union people to turn out. And they had a whole bunch of goons from the UAW there, the kind that carry baseball bats and stuff.
And I got to go to bed, folks. My styrofoam cup just turned into porcelain, and I don't remember any of it. What happened here?
It's a miracle.
Somebody playing with my head.
Somebody brought you some real coffee, Bill, and you didn't see him do it. That's what happened.
I certainly did not see it.
It's one of those CIA agents, I think.
I want to see my styrofoam cup turned to porcelain, or just full of coffee. That'd be good. But anyway, the bus was supposed to become in Indianapolis Saturday. We had 600 protesters show up for our side, and they had two SWAT teams out. Turned out the police, the Indianapolis Police Department, had decided this was going to be their opportunity to cause a confrontation and arrest me and some of my supporters. And they had the SWAT team out. They were filming everybody from the roof, but they were making sure they could only film the back of the people.
Give me that fly swatter.
That's right. Film the backs of the UAW.
Big fly in.
They were filming the front of all of us. They were taking a lot of film footage of us, and they had their provocateurs trying to start fights with our people, and to their credit, none of our people bought it. They recognized it for what it was and kept the protest peaceful. Now, I went out and bought some soft drinks for our side, and my son and I drove down the street and threw the soft drinks out to our side, and we went back to get some more.
Six people killed by a flying Pepsi Cola can.
No. And we went back to get some more, and as we got back to the street, cops came up and told me I couldn't drive down the street. And I said, well, why not? You've been keeping us out of the street all morning. Because if our people did anything, if we stood on the grass, the cops told us to get off the grass because we were on the grass. And if we stood in the street, they said, get out of the street because you're in the street. It didn't matter where our side stood, that the cops would tell us to move. So this time, and I'd just driven down the street, and there was a car driving down the street ahead of me when this cop comes up and says, you can't drive down the street. I said, well, why not? You've been keeping us out of the street all morning, blah, blah, blah. And he says, you can't drive down the street. You'll have to park your car. And I said, okay, fine. I go to back up to park the car, and lo and behold, there's the bus right behind me. It has already turned the corner. It can't back up because there's a four-lane highway behind it. And it can't go forward because I'm in the way.
See, folks, I told you there really is a God. Can you imagine this happening by accident?
This was truly an accident.
There's the bus. They can't back up. You're right in front of the bus.
And I said a little prayer to God. I said, "You did this on purpose, didn't you?" God has a really tremendous sense of humor. He just really does.
Stick around here a while and you'll find out just how
I said, this
humorous
is
he can be.
I said, "You're doing this, aren't you, God?" I said, "I have to do it." Okay. So I turned the car off. I got out and I locked the car. And so there's the bus stuck behind my little van, and it was a picture worth a thousand words. It was definitely a David and Goliath kind of moment because the bus was huge, just towering over my van. And I walked down to get one of our photographers to get a picture of it, and one of the cops said, "Unlock your car." And I said, "No," because whenever they tell you to unlock your car, it's because they want to do an illegal search later. So I want to warn people, never fall for that. If you get stopped by a cop and you have to get out of your car, get out of it with the windows up and the doors locked, because that's the only way you can keep them from illegally searching it. And if it's unlocked, they will claim they had your consent. So anyway, I got out, locked it, and went down. Another cop said, "Move your car." And I turned around to go move the car. I was walking with the photographer, going back to my car, going to move it, when a cop tackled me. Now, his name was Greg Gehring, and he works at the Indianapolis Police Department at the South Madison location. And if I had the number here, I would give it out, but I don't have it right now. I'll find it before too long.
Guy puts a football tackle on a woman.
From behind. That
from
was
behind crazy. On pavement.
This woman I mean, well, now he didn't knock me to the ground because I used to practice with my sons in their football. I didn't go down. But I didn't, and also didn't resist. Once he said, "You're under arrest," I said, "For what?" And he said, "Obstructing traffic." I said, "Oh, okay." So I put both hands behind my back. He puts me in handcuffs very tightly, damaged my wrist, and then starts shoving me towards the paddy wagon. And I went cooperatively, and I'm stepping up into the paddy wagon, and he rams my head into the paddy wagon and knocks me out. Now, we got all this on film.
Well, you know better than to play football with no helmet, don't you? Linda plays football. Can you believe that?
Well, I did for once, but my
with cops in the street.
Not on purpose. So I got a football I'm going to play with him with here shortly. So anyway, he knocked me out. I'm in the back of the paddy wagon, and it's really hot. I came to a little while later, and the paddy wagon takes off, and we stop 15 minutes later. Now, I thought we were arriving at where they were going to book me. Now, realize that obstructing traffic is not an arrestable offense to begin with. It's a ticketable offense. So it was truly odd that they would arrest me to begin with. And then secondly, they put me in the back of the paddy wagon with my gun on. Because I always have a gun. They know I have a gun. I wear my gun. I usually have more than one gun, in fact. This particular day, I just had one on.
Now, you're telling me that the cops put you in the paddy wagon, handcuffs with a gun.
Yes, and it's particularly interesting because we had a guy named Michael Taylor who supposedly committed suicide in the back of a police car because they put him in there with his gun. Now, he was handcuffed with his hands behind his back, and his gun was supposedly in his shoe.
And he was shot neatly in the forehead.
Ever right. And he supposedly committed suicide. Two autopsies later, they still insisted he committed suicide. So this is how Indianapolis police get rid of people they don't like. They put them back in the police car, the paddy wagon, with a gun on, handcuffed. Now, I found out how they actually accomplished it, because I didn't know this, but they stopped the paddy wagon about 15 minutes into the ride and tell me to get out. And I tell them before I get out, I said, "I have a gun, and it is under my arm," because I didn't want them to have one of those freak-out cop reactions where they go, "She's got a gun, blam, blam, blam," and shoot me. So I said, "I have a gun. I cannot get to it. I'm not going to try to get to it, but it is under my arm." And they open the paddy wagon, and I have to step down 3 feet with my hands behind my back, which is hard to do if you've never done it. And I look up, and there's this cop standing there, a female cop, with a Glock pistol pointed at me, with her hand on the trigger, with her finger on the trigger, ready to shoot. And just at that moment, a woman came around the corner, and she goes, "Are you okay? Are you all right?"
Who was that mess bandit?
I wish I knew. This lady was either an angel or one of the protesters, but she'd followed the paddy wagon with me in it to make sure I was okay. And I want to warn people, if you're at a protest or a gun rally or anything and any of your people are arrested, somebody needs to follow the police car or the paddy wagon because they may be intending to kill the person because that's what they were going to do to me. I am certain that had this lady not shown up when she did, I would be dead right now. because this paddy wagon had stopped in a gravel alley. They didn't get anybody else out of the paddy wagon, and the people in the paddy wagon cannot see what's going on because the windows are covered. I was the only person they took out. And this lady came around the corner, and she said, "Are you okay? Are you all right?" And the cops told her to leave or they would arrest her, and she didn't leave. She went back around the corner and stuck her head back again a few minutes later, and she goes, "I'm going to make sure she's okay." They said, "If you don't leave, you're going to be arrested." But they ended up putting me back in the paddy wagon, and then we drove to downtown to the booking station. In the meantime, I found out they were telling my family. Now, this was 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the whole ride took maybe 30 minutes if they hadn't stopped, and it took 45 minutes because they did stop. So we got there about 5:45. They were telling my family I wouldn't be there till 8 o'clock.
Till 8 o'clock?
Right. So they had this plan. It was definite that they had this plan. They said that the paddy wagon had to stop and pick up other people on the way. That paddy wagon didn't stop anywhere except the gravel alley where there was a cop holding a gun on me. So I think they intended to kill me.
Well, I think they probably did too, if it had not been for the lonesome stranger who came along. Maybe that's what would have happened.
I want to thank her, and I'd like to find out who it is. I really appreciate it. But one of the guys in the paddy wagon did see the cop pointing the gun at me, because he could see through the people.
Is there any way that you're going to be able to find her?
I don't know. I assume she's from Indianapolis and that she listens to my radio program, because that's how people knew to come to the protest to begin with.
Uh-huh.
So I've continuously mentioned this on the program, and I hope she'll hear it and contact us.
Okay. Bob, what do you think about all this? What's this going to lead to?
Well,
Bob, give me that microphone.
I think
don't touch that button anymore.
I got...
Don't touch the button anymore. Don't touch the button anymore.
My hand's off the button.
Linda voted, not Bob.
Hands off the button.
Well, there goes my other ear.
Well, I think the hour is a lot later than people realize. One of the things that has become very clear to me at your convention is it's much later even than I realized. It's very late in the game, as Lenny was saying last night. And the treatment of Linda is evidence of that. They're getting desperate, and they're getting more ruthless and more willing to take tremendous risks to quiet Linda among other people.
Which makes me believe that they're afraid.
And they're obvious about it, too. I don't think they are afraid. I think they're stupid enough that they're not afraid. They're doing things out in the open now to people. Blatantly, and they're getting by with it. Look at Waco. That's a good example. Look at what they did. They did it on national television. They got away with it. They've still gotten away with it. Nobody's been punished for that. And everything that they've done, it's been progressively more and more obvious. And nobody stops them.
Well, I think they're going to be punished for it. It's just a question of when. I think that they're all going to be tried by a jury of the peers eventually. I don't know how long it will take, but eventually. And
Bill, I'm for summary execution. Sorry, I'm not.
Well, we can't profess to believe in and support ideals and not follow through with those ideals. Now, if in the war that they're going to bring to us to take our liberties away, we face these people across the battlefield, I ain't taking no prisoners.
Well, I figure when they come to my door, they've brought the war to me. And they've already come to my door.
Well, coming, let me see. Coming to your door this is happening across the country. I guess what I'm trying to say is, when and where are we going to draw the line, and what and how are we going to do it? Because we really are getting down to the wire, and real time really is short.
Well, I like your approach with each militia being formed in each local area, all the people knowing each other in that unit and being prepared to fight for their people and not allow them to take any prisoners from their people, period. When they come to arrest somebody on one of these bogus charges, we've got to be willing to stand up to it. The other night, for instance, when we couldn't get our car back, Al was ready to go take the militia and get our car back because they were just jacking with us. They were messing with us. They said, They put a detective hold on the car when they should have just given us the car back when I got out of jail. They had no legal right to keep the car. They had no legal right to keep our guns either, which they kept my guns. And they didn't have any right to keep any of that stuff. It was all personal property.
If I don't take a break here, we're not going to have any legal right to stay on the air. So don't go away, folks. I'll be right back, I think. It's all scrambled right over there. To Swiss America Trading, folks, to get your gold and silver. You see, in the saloon, you can't play poker without it. You ever hear the clink of the coins on the poker table in the Western movies? Well, that's the way it's got to be. Sit down with Federal Reserve notes, and you'll get shot before you cheat. Guaranteed. Are you listening? Out there. This is really important. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to get back to real money. Don't you understand that if we all would take these worthless things down and trade them in for gold and silver coins and start using them and nothing else, this crooked system would collapse overnight. Those people that are trying to enslave us would literally go bankrupt. It would be the end, folks, of the New World Order. I mean the end. There's no question about it. So, if you want to be a part of what we're trying to do, call our sponsors, Swiss America Trading. Now, if you don't want to call them, call somebody. Call somebody. We care about you. We want you to survive what's coming. We want you to help us take this country back. And we want to do it every way that we can. And one of those ways is to short-circuit their economic system. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. The only legal money in this country is gold and silver coin. The Constitution plainly states no state shall tender as payment or debt anything other than gold or silver coin. So let's get legal. Let's start using real money. Let's break the bank, so to speak. I mean, that was the name of a popular game show on television, I think. I think that they understood the prophetic nature of the name of their game, but that's what we need to do. And I think that even if you don't want to participate in that, you're going to have some gold and silver coin to protect at least a part of your assets that you worked all of your life to accumulate, because it's the only thing in the history of the world that has proven to retain its value from hell or high water. A gold coin will buy the same amount of merchandise, land, eggs, chickens, wheat now today than it could in 1776, or in 1612, or in 1823, or anything else. I don't know what's going on here, folks. Seems to be a mystery. Everybody's getting up and running toward the door. I don't know if they're going to help us in this thing or not. I don't even know what the heck is going on here. What's that? What? Well, I didn't know they'd all run down there so quick. Everybody in the country got up and ran down to Swiss America Trading. All there is left now is a pile of sticks. Did you see that stampede?
Wow.
There's no gold or silver left in the whole city of Phoenix. By the way, folks, in Phoenix, we just heard today they're putting TV cameras on poles by the freeways. You know what that means? Clean those 22s and get busy.
Target practice opportunity.
Target practice. It definitely is. That's one of the things militia units have been doing around the country. I didn't see any of them coming out here from Phoenix yet. And also none of the stickers yet, which either means your militias out here are doing a great job getting rid of the stickers, or they haven't got here yet. Which is it?
No, they're doing a great job. We don't just get rid of the stickers. I mean, if they put a sticker on a sign, we get rid of the whole sign.
Oh, right.
And a lot of other things. Linda, what do you think about this conference here? I mean, you've had a chance to meet some of these people, and you got up and talked for 2 hours and all
tremendous
kinds of things.
Tremendous. I wouldn't have missed this for the world. I am so glad we came out to this and met so many good people. And this new research center that you have got is really going to take off. This is going to be the best resource we have right now in this country for Patriot information. But the people that I met here, I think that's been the most valuable thing for me. Anybody that missed this convention, you really missed something. You missed an opportunity to hear some of the best speakers in the country and to meet some of the strongest, hardest working patriots in the country. People that don't just talk a good game, that are out there doing it. And I tell you, that's been the best part of it all.
That's true also for the entire community of St. John's that I've met through Bill. The local people here are extremely committed, very patriotic. And I think Bill has added a little excitement to their lives as well.
Definitely that.
Well, they're about to have a double banger then, because we're going to move out here.
Well, that would certainly be nice, and you would certainly be welcome, Linda.
Well, that's what we're doing this weekend, is looking for a place to move. And I encourage anybody that is interested in living in a like-minded community to look here, because one of the things I saw that was just fantastic on the front page of the paper tonight, the front page is a local little paper. It's a small paper, maybe 5 pages. The very front page article said they're going to have a meeting, a town meeting at the convention, on Reform 94, which I take it has something to do with ranches and federal regulation of land.
Mm-hmm.
But they invited all the city and county employees, any interested persons and farmers to come to this convention. And the reason was to discuss all the legal methods of resolving the problem in order to stave off physical violence in response to Reform 84 from the feds. And I said, yes, my kind of people.
Well, they're pushing people to the wall, and the people who live in this state, especially in the rural areas, are still hardcore, freedom-loving, liberty-backing, responsible, and respectful people, and they're not going to take it.
The land is beautiful out here, too. Just beautiful. I've never seen anything so gorgeous.
You all thought I was kidding you, didn't you?
It is beautiful. One of the beautiful things about it is one of the few states where you can absolutely carry a sidearm, open carry a sidearm, just about anywhere, completely legally. And those of us that understand the responsibility of the Second Amendment, the requirement that the Second Amendment implies to carry a sidearm, not just a option. If you like it, you can do it. If you don't like it, you can't. When you put it in the framework of the founding fathers and their understanding of history and philosophy, going back to Roman times, they actually expected people to think of it as a requirement.
It's a responsibility.
It's a responsibility. And we can do it here in Arizona.
And it feels so good to be in a crowd of people. This is the first place I've been in the United States this year that I was the only person not armed, because I didn't wear my gun over from the hotel, so I didn't have to wear my jacket. And then it's the first place I didn't feel like I needed my gun. I said, well, all these other guys armed, what do I need mine for? Oh, this was great. It was a good feeling. And the first restaurant we came to outside of Phoenix, Al said, oh, I'm going to like it here, because the sign said, please leave your gun in the car. They just assumed you would have one, yeah. And it says, please leave your gun in the car.
She's not joking.
I'm not. Every restaurant we've been to has assumed that you had a gun. And some would say, firearms permitted. Some would say, leave your gun in the car. You know, this type of thing. But none of them would have a spastic reaction to anybody walking around armed like you would see. For instance, in Indianapolis, I took my gun with me. I take my gun with me everywhere. But I happened to take my jacket off in the studio that we worked in one day, and a couple of the guys with me took their jackets off, and we're sitting in a private room in a studio, and the people came over and asked us to put our jackets back on because our guns were scaring people.
Well, people, everybody has a weapon here. Most people wear their weapon in plain view, and everybody's used to it here. And because of that, everybody's very polite to everybody else.
Well, I noticed that the kids I noticed kids can run the sidewalks at night. There's no graffiti. There doesn't seem to be any crime. It's just, you know, it's exactly what you would expect in an armed society.
Even our big cities, Phoenix and Tucson, have the lowest crime rates per capita. And these are FBI statistics. Per 100,000, they have the lowest crime rates, one of the lowest crime rates in the nation. And it's a completely open state. And yet we have the lower crime rate. Compare that to Washington, D.C. and New York City, where they have the harshest gun control and the highest crime rate for guns.
Granola land. Look at their crime rate.
Same thing in California. Exactly.
Exactly. Well, Kennesaw, Georgia, the first city to pass the law that every homeowner had to be armed. Now, that's right nearby. It's right next to my hometown.
Uh-huh.
And they had... their crime rate went down 60% after they passed that law.
That's because the propaganda that's out there is the opposite of the truth. As usual, the actual FBI statistics are that about, what is it, I think 50,000 bill people are actually killed or hurt with firearms every year.
Mm-hmm.
Over a million, according to the FBI, over a million crimes are averted and prevented by the simple drawing a firearm during an attempted crime.
That's correct. And a lot of the statistics of people being killed by gunfire are criminals who were killed in the act of committing a crime by a citizen who carried a gun, a weapon. You know, I've told people have called in my program before and asked about this, and I've told them I carry a weapon. And I don't think everybody believes me. What's this on my hip here?
You got a 45 there, Bill.
They don't really teach the history in the schools. You see, it goes all the way back to before Greek and Roman times. In Greek and Roman times, even Aristotle wrote about it, Plato wrote about it, later on Machiavelli wrote about it, John Locke wrote about it. Our highly educated founding fathers read all these books, and they knew that there is a direct correlation between freedom and an armed population. Armed populations throughout history have always been free. The Romans lost their freedom when they gave up their arms, and Caesar started a professional standing army instead of an armed population.
Hitler was the first one to brag about having had a total confiscation of the arms of the citizenry, and bragging that for the first time in the history of the world, a nation had a gun ban. And now our country's trying to do the same thing. National gun registration in Nazi Germany, just like here.
And in fact, the 1968 Gun Control Act in our country is a word-for-word translation of the Nazi Germany Act.
And I'm sure Plato had to fight Sword Control Incorporated.
Hey, speaking of those guys, Handgun Control Inc., we had a mayor's town meeting one day that he tried not to advertise. Our mayor in Indianapolis did not announce this meeting until the afternoon paper, which doesn't hit the street till about 3:30. He was having a town hall meeting to talk about whether they were going to put Secret Service in the housing project and model the warrantless house-to-house searches after the program in Chicago. Now, he didn't want the general population to know about this because he was going to go out and speak to some of the poor people in the housing project area, but he had to because he was calling it a town meeting. Well, we got wind of it about 4 o'clock, and by the meeting time was at 6, we still managed to turn out about 300 people. And we came out with our Don't Tread on Me signs and, you know, the usual, the bumper stickers with dictators love gun control and all this kind of stuff. So, we had our hardcore crowd there. and handgun control, Inc. was there, and you could pick them out of the entire crowd because they were wearing Armani suits. They had $400 shoes on, you know, creases that would cut meat in their slacks, and gold jewelry. They look like mafia is what they look like.
You hear that, Tim? You get a pair of those pants, you don't have to stay up all night slicing meat for dinner the next day.
Well, these guys, I mean, there was three of them there, and they were just absolutely obnoxious. You know, they came up behind me because my husband and I went out there wearing our red, white, and blue flag jackets that just stand out, you know, for blocks if you wear them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they spotted us immediately as the rabble rousers that we are.
Those are Russian artillery targets.
And came up behind us and were elbowing us and, you know, stepping on the backs of our shoes and this kind of stuff in the crowd. And they had beautiful, very expensively printed literature to pass out to the crowd. Then the media control was great because here we had all these people there. We had as many or more people there than they had planted in the audience. And yet when the media would show it on TV later, you couldn't see a thing. We had all these big 3 foot by 5 foot. We had three foot by 5 foot flags that said, "Don't tread on me." Now this big in a small room. This was a very small room. They had to zoom in on the people that they wanted to show on TV to keep these from showing, and they never mentioned any protesters there at all. Now, that's the type of media control we've got.
You know, people forget that the media are all private corporations. See, it's like a book publisher can publish the books that he wants.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to publish my book, and the media are private corporations. They're owned by
traders and vultures.
Who happen to be traders and vultures.
Yeah, that's
and they can put on the air whatever they want.
They can turn
and that's
that
what they do. And they do. They put on the air what they want.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, we think the news media are supposed to be an altruistic kind of organization that's going to put on the real news.
There is no such thing as a free press.
And when people ask me why hasn't the Waco tape been on TV, that's why. They won't put it on TV. They won't even take our advertisements for it. We've had every single major broadcasting station turn down 30-second advertisements for the Waco tape. Because it's too controversial. That's what they say. And this is a very toned-down, calm ad that just says where you can buy the Waco tapes. That's all.
When somebody says, "I'm not going to do that because it's too controversial," what they're really saying is, "I'm a wimp. I'm not going to take a stand. I'm not going to say for or against because I'm going to make somebody mad and they won't buy my product." Is that what our country's boiled down to, is the buy my product?
Well, worse than that, they'll take a stand, all right, if it involves slamming me. Because those same stations wouldn't take our ads, would run a two-part controversial series.
Yeah, but advertising has a lot to do with this. A newspaper prints what it prints because if it doesn't, the advertisers withdraw their advertising money. And a newspaper can't live on the nickels and quarters and 50-cent pieces and dollar and a quarter for the Sunday paper that we pay for. They live on that advertising dollar.
Then what we need to start doing is protesting the advertisers completely. Just cut them off.
That's right. That's correct. Anyway, here's what we should do, I think. Anyway, somehow, here. Yeah, this is what we should do, folks. Listen carefully while Deadeye gives you a little lesson in ethics.
A cowboy must never shoot first.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's not Deadeye.
A poor man or take unfair advantage. He must never go back on his word or a trust confided in him. He must always tell the truth. He must be gentle with children, the elderly, and animals. He must not advocate or possess racially or religiously intolerant ideas. He must help people in distress. He must be a good worker. He must keep himself clean in thought, speech, actions, and personal habits. He must respect women, parents, and his nation's laws. The cowboy is a patriot.
And around here, he really is. I mean, you heard that. About how many times did you see speakers up here who, we don't need to talk about who they were because of who they are, but what did they tell these people here?
Well, the message was pretty consistent. You know, I was really struck by what Lenny said the other day. Somebody asked him the question about what to do about the fact that they live in a state where they have very heavy gun control. You know? And he said, move.
That's right. He did. That's exactly what he said.
Yeah. Get ready. The time is short. And join up with us cowboys out here in Arizona and other states where, you know, we don't have that kind of gun control and where people are ready and willing to take a stand on their freedom.
And if you're one of those people that's still saying we can do it through the vote, well, you could probably do it in a small town if there was enough of you to take the town over. And then from there, grow and grow and grow and grow and take it on outward. But you're not going to be able to do it the way the system's set up now. So anybody that's interested in moving out here and populating a large section of land, you can contact me at American Justice Federation. Leave a message. I'm going to be looking at land this week, and we'll see what the prices are and what's available and what we can do. But we have looked into this in several times. We know that immediately you can get some old used trailers. They're nothing fancy, but they're livable. For $3,000 to $5,000, you can plunk them down on some land with a generator, dig a well, and be in business and have a pretty decent place to live for less than $10,000.
Land out here is really cheap. It's amazing. This is people think that, oh, this is a desert, and the land is not all that desirable, so it's cheap. But it's a beautiful land. It's, you know, it's not hard to survive on. There's water there if you know where to dig for it.
And, it looks gorgeous to me, I'll tell you. As soon as we hit Sholo, it was like turn on the trees. It was gorgeous.
Bob's not from around here. We're sitting on top of one of the largest aquifers in the United States. There's more water here than any place else in this country, right beneath our feet. Not too far from where we sit is the Little Colorado River, one of the two rivers in the country that flow north. Within about 35 or 40 minutes of here is one of the last natural standing virgin forests in the country. One of the best ski areas in the United States is less than an hour from here. 2 hours is the Grand Canyon. I can drive 10 minutes in any direction and be at a lake fishing.
You know what I like about it?
We have big, huge herds of elk and deer and everything. But you've been talking to Tim today, haven't you?
Well, you know what? I went 200 miles and didn't see a single federal building. That's what I like.
That's right. I won't either.
Can't beat that with a stick. And then I got over to Tim's place and saw this gigantic, gigantic buffalo head hanging on his wall, and another thing, I think it was a deer head, but I got a feeling it's not a deer because it didn't look like the deer we have.
No, it's
what
an elk.
What is it? It's an elk, okay. Now, you can tell I haven't hunted elk.
It would take about 8 normal deer heads to make that one elk head.
Well, I was going to say, that was one big mamma jamma. It was huge. And he got 454 pounds of meat off that, the one that he has hanging on his wall there.
You know John Wayne used to live about a 30-minute drive from here?
No.
Yeah.
I can see why. It's gorgeous.
It is.
Gorgeous. It's gorgeous. And the people are great. People are great. You immediately want to move here. If you ever come here once, you will not want to go away. I can guarantee that.
I knew this was going to happen, folks. I told you when you got out here and looked at that sky and looked at the this area.
And you make everybody come into Phoenix and drive 4 hours so they have to be in.
No other way to get here unless you got a parachute.
Of course, after you've been in Phoenix, you really appreciate it that much more.
Oh, that's true.
Everybody's well in Phoenix today.
No, I didn't want to. Phoenix was all right, but it's nothing compared to this. The ride out here was great because you see four different types of climate on the way. It's warm the whole way, but you see cactuses and just beautiful mountains. Then you actually drive
not just cactus, but wild.
Oh.
Which is one of the most beautiful cactuses that there is, and it only grows in certain areas in Arizona.
Well, there was. I took pictures of umpteen different kinds of them because there were little short, squat ones, great big, huge ones, some that I've never even heard of before, much less seen. It was amazing. I mean, we drove around for an hour and a half just taking pictures of the cactus. Then we went into the canyons, we're in the mountains. It was unbelievable.
Sheriff Mack, the one who protested the Brady Bill and won in court,
yeah.
You know what he does with his prisoners?
What?
He throws them in the cactus patch.
It's incredible environmental diversity out here, including cactus patches. A lot of people think Arizona is just desert. In fact, we have pine forests and beautiful mountains and incredible diversity in the environment. In fact, I just got a couple of great deals in Tim's surplus shop next door today on on some new camo, and so I can be prepared. And to be properly prepared, I had to get two complete sets of camo, one for the desert and one for the forest.
That's
because
good.
We have both right here within just a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
Not even that far, because when we got out of the canyons, when we hit Sholo, came in here, we left the canyons and came through all the pines. It was just gorgeous. I couldn't believe it. But you can see all this in an hour.
By the way, folks, yeah. If you normally listen to Linda's broadcast, she'll be broadcasting her show live from our studios here tomorrow. She did that earlier today. And I don't know, are you going to take call-ins tomorrow?
Well, we're going to take call-ins tomorrow, with the principal reason being that I can't do my normal news from here because I don't have any way to get a hold of it from the office. So we may, well, I still got quite a bit of news I didn't get to today, but we will take call-ins, and let's see what's going on around the country. You'll have to call and let me know what's going on around the country, because I've been incommunicado, and I'll tell you, it's been wonderful. I'm glad to not know what happened today. What nasty things did the federal government do to anybody today? I don't know, and I can't say I don't care, but it has been nice not to hear about it for a day.
You know, we're running out of time, folks. Is there something you'd both like to say real quick? Because I got to sign off here.
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here, Bill, and to thank the people that showed up here and the people that are your listeners, because it really makes the whole thing worthwhile. Bill, you know, we talked a little earlier about how tired you are, how tired I am, and, you know, physically, but the spirit and love and support we get from the people, like right now, I'm just high as a kite.
It's good.
Just on that, and I just love you all.
I can't say it any better than that. He's pegged it. It's the people. It's the people of this country that made the country great, and it's the people of this country that are going to make the country great once more. And I'm glad to see a whole room full of them here tonight. Wish all of you could be here. I know many of you wanted to be and couldn't. Thanks for listening.
Well, they can sure be here next time, and there will be next time. Good night, folks, and God bless each and every single one of you. And for those of you here sitting out in the audience tomorrow night, get ready, because...
an old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a plowing through the ragged sky, and up the plow he drove. I am still on fire, and
yes, folks, tomorrow night you're going to be up on the mesa, sleeping out under the beautiful star-studded Arizona sky. And if you look up very carefully, this is what you're going to see.
Their eyes that blur, their chips all focused with. They're riding hard to catch that bird that they ain't caught up yet. For they gotta ride forever on that range up in the sky, on horses snorting fire, as they ride on to their cry. I am
forget, folks, tomorrow night there will be no satellite broadcast the hour of the time, shortwave only.
If you want to save your soul from hell, we're riding on our way. Then cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride. But trying to catch the devil's herd, some softies in the sky. I am the Isle.
come.